All right. Good morning, everybody. We're good afternoon. I mean, it's morning for us still, but the welcome, Bob. We're glad to have you here. Hopefully, we can get this over quick and painlessly. So, please proceed.
I think the red light, the one that did I hit it right?
You got it right.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Bob Budd. I'm the director of the Wyoming Wildlife Natural Resource Trust. With me today, Kim Floyd, who is the chairman of the board. For those who aren't familiar, we have a 9-member board appointed from judicial districts, and Kim has been on the board since its inception. And then Robin Haynes, who's our grants manager, and that is the entirety of our staff is here, and 1/9 of the board is here as well. So I know that you are pressed for time, so unless you want me to, I'm not going to walk through every item. There are no changes in the budget from the last one that you saw. After the reductions that were made the last time, we retained those reductions. So what you're seeing is basically a flatline administrative budget, and the budget for projects has remained the same as well. Reminder of a couple of things probably that are pertinent. We did remove all general fund, the administration, and everything else from this program 2 years ago. We operate solely on the interest earned on the trust and then any other contributions, but those generally go into the trust itself. We're able to do that very effectively and still meet the requirements that are out there as far as demand for projects. The other thing that's probably pertinent is that in the last time we went through this, you asked about the balance in the account, in the project account. We were carrying what appears to be a very hefty balance there, about $30 million. Of that, over $25 million is already contractually committed. That's the lag time between when a project is approved and when it gets completed. And I had gone through that in some detail with you all, explaining that lag and the amount that's committed. That's actually come down now. A year ago when we were in here, the excess that was there to catch up as we go through this recession period was about $7.5 million. I predicted we'd be down around 5 or 6 this year. We're down just below 5 now with the carryover. What that does is allows us to go through these periods where we're not earning tremendous amounts of revenue and we're not asking for any general fund appropriations and still meet the demand that's out there. So that is coming back where we thought it would, and that's kind of how we've always tried to budget as a board and staff, is to have a little bit of reserve there should we get a project we really need to do, and that continues to go that way. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions or specific questions about the program, the projects we're doing, or anything else at this point in time.
Questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Kocher.
What's the corpus of the trust now?
Mr. Chairman, the corpus is $104 million and change. It's just over $104
million. And is Kim the only original member left on the board, or Steve Meadows?
Mr. Chairman, there are three. There's Kim Floyd from here, Steve Meadows from Jackson is our vice chairman, and Ken Bannister from Torrington. Those are the three who have been reappointed and remain as original members. The rest have all cycled through, some faster than others. But
thank you.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Driscoll.
Chairman Bob, what interest are you getting? Are you in one of the new special pools? Or are you guys back? Where are you at for interest, and is it working for you?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Driscoll, we budget about a 4% return, and over the last 12 years, we've been right in that ballpark. That's kind of the cash balance or the cash count. This year, we kept it at that kind of a level, not knowing for sure what would happen. We are one of the agencies that was put in under Amendment 2. It's too soon for me to be able to tell you that until we get to July and actually have a year behind us. But we would hope that we're going to be up. And obviously, investment income this year looks a little brighter than it has in past years. So we're hopeful that we'll be in the range where we're earning somewhere around 6 or 7 as opposed to 4, 4.5.
Representative Sommer.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And I know I was giving you a hard time earlier, but I want to thank you and your board for the good work you do for wildlife in the state of Wyoming, and I, for one, appreciate that.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, Representative Summers.
What did you make last year? Did you make 4% last year?
Mr. Chairman, we were right at 4%. It was, I think, 3.85 or something. Do you know off the top of your head? But it's in that ballpark, yeah. Yes.
Mr. Chairman?
Co-chair.
I'm gratified to see that Mike Massey is here from District 2. When we started this fund, I was the sponsor. He was the co-sponsor of the bill. He floor managed the bill for me, and he's also sat on the conference committee with me. So glad to see him in there and tell him to pull his socks up and get to work.
Mr. Chairman, I will do that. He's a welcome member of this board and does a yeoman's work. Really appreciate having people like Mike on there.
Further questions? All right. That was pretty easy.
Thank you, sir.
We could probably do this by phone next time, right?
Now we're only an hour behind.
Then boom. Yeah, I'll take that.
That's why I do.
So we get another break?
Yeah.
How are you doing, Doug? I'm doing well so far. I'm waiting for my, here we go. Oh, I'm looking on the wrong place. One second. Okay, Director Miyamoto, please proceed. Welcome. Good to see you again. It's always fun to have Ag in front of us. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. We appreciate the opportunity
Miyamoto.
To talk to you about our exception budget today. With the table today, is this, do I need to turn this on?
Yes, please.
There you go.
Sorry about that. With me at the table today, I have Julie Cook. She's the manager of our administration division. And then right behind us, I have Stacia Berry, who's our deputy director. And I have James Goodrich, who is the manager of the state fair. And I have Teresa Jarvis, who is the manager of our analytical services lab over in Laramie, also happens to be the Wyoming state chemist. And those are the folks that we have with us today to help present our budget to you. With that, I suppose if it's all right with you, we can just start and run through the budget as however you would best like to just proceed.
Page by page. We'll go through section by section.
On page 5, you'll see our summary table. And we have some exception budget requests today, and they really fall into one of three categories. The first category of our exception budget requests just represent fundamental shifts to the services offered by the Department of Ag if we don't have some budget mechanisms available to continue those programs. So examples of that, obviously the most poignant one would be that of State Fair, and then we also have a request in here for some money for our wolf management program, since wolves have changed jurisdictions from federal back to state in the intervening time. So that's one category of exception budget requests. The second one have to do with legislative requirements that we're requesting to support. And so examples of that would be industrial hemp farming. We had the industrial hemp farming bill from last year. In order for us to stand up a pilot project, that's one of our requests in that second category. And then we also have a requirement to report to you those requests that we have to sustain our AWAC employee. We only have one, but that also is in this second category. And then the third exception budget item category that we have are simply wear items of equipment, mostly related to the analytical services lab, where we have some equipment that's reached the end of its lifespan, and we're requesting money to replace that equipment, keep the lab going. You'll see also that we have made our proposals for compliance with Section 320 reductions. There we have two FTEs that we're proposing to eliminate from the Department of Ag. One is in the administration division of the department, and the other FTE is in our consumer health services division, and that is an inspector position that we're proposing to eliminate.
Please.
If I might ask, Director, on your exception request, that 12th item, the cut the CHS inspector, what's CHS?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, CHS stands for Consumer Health Services.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And we'll get to this section when you get there, but I'm hoping that's not like an inspector in a meat plant.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, that was one of our analytics, was to look at what this position does. It is not permanently assigned to a state meat inspection facility, so this is an inspector that would inspect commercial food establishments, and so far we've been able to try to put people into travel status to cover those without impacting our inspections for commercial food establishments, but this position was never assigned to state meat inspection facility full time.
All right, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You should have a handout that itemizes out our exception budget requests. We try to put this in a standalone format so you can kind of keep it on the side of your budget book, but it's just a spreadsheet that has our prioritized exception budget lists there. Starting on page 15, we have our administration section budget, unit 101. We do have exception budget items related to this unit. On page 16, you will see that we have an exception budget request for computers, software licenses, and for printers. The governor recommended funding $91,389 of this exception request. Also on page 17, you'll see that this is where we have our first proposal for Section 320 compliance. And this is proposing eliminating our grants accountant position within the administration division of the department. Mr. Chairman, our next budget for consideration is on page 22, and this is unit 102. This is the budget for the Board of Ag, and we have no exception budget items for this unit. On page 24, we have the budget for our brucellosis task force. There are also no exception budget items for this unit. On page 27, we have our livestock market reporting program. We have no exception budget items for this unit.
On page 31, we have our Consumer Health Services section budget, and we do have exception budget items related to this unit. And so the first one of those exception budget items can be found on page 33, and that is for the AWAC inspector that we were talking about earlier. This is this position has been in the department since 2007. So it's not a change in the number of positions associated with the department. It's just we need to get approval, legislative approval, to maintain this AWAC inspector. This person services two state meat inspection facilities in Fremont County, and this position is 100% federally funded.
Is that all this person does is inspect those two facilities?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct. We have Wyoming Custom Meats in Hudson and Clark's in Riverton. And so each of those facilities, as I understand it, I think they have three inspection days each or three slaughter days each. Our inspector has to be on the floor for each one of those slaughter processes. And then they have to visit the other facility that's processing within the day, but they don't have to be there for the entire operation. So typically the way this would work is our inspector would go into Wyoming Custom Meat in the morning and inspect the slaughter process and then go over to Clark's later in the day, check on their processing operations and fill out the forms, and that's what this person does.
Representative Summers first.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And Director Miyamoto, you and I have had conversations over the course of the summer. I recently got into the grass-fed beef business, and what I soon found out is the real bottleneck in the whole process is processing, just the number of processors. And then when I started talking to processors, there was a concern out there that I expressed that from processors that we were having a little bit of a bottleneck with inspectors. And so I really appreciate the efforts that you went to get this done. And so my question to you, and I think you've answered, but are we there? Do we have enough meat inspectors to handle the facilities that we do have in Wyoming, which is too short to begin with? But are we there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, for the time being, I believe we are there. We have restructured some assignment duties, particularly in the central part of the state, to try to get everybody covered. We polled all of our state meat inspection processors to see if we're aligning with their business plans. Are we getting covered the kind of activity that they would like to undertake? And for now, we are. But we have heard that there may be state meat inspection processors that would like to ramp up and add additional days of processing. And if that happens, we'll have to reevaluate and prioritize where our inspectors go to make sure that we can get everybody covered. But for right now, we're good.
Okay, just a quick follow-up, Mr. Chairman. And I just want to reiterate that this is, if you want to get your meat sold, you have to be inspected. I'm going out of state, so that's what I have to do. But I've heard that there's, perhaps another plant on the western side of the state that may try to get state inspection. So I just hope you don't get in a bottleneck in the next 2 years. I guess you always have a supplemental you can cut. This is a big deal to me just because I think we want to sell beef. The bottleneck should not be state government inspection. So when there's an issue, I'm sure you'll bring it to us. But thank
Mr. Chairman. I think we're over here to Representative Larson is first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, and this goes back to follow up on Representative Summers. So correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is these state inspectors are via an MOU with USDA and allows, if those facilities in the state have that state inspector, and it's not a USDA inspector, a federal inspector, that then they're allowed to sell meat to the public intrastate. But we are not able to sell interstate, if my understanding that's correct. And is there a possibility that we could ever change that MOU to allow that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, our national association, National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, has been trying to work on federal policy for a long time. That said, okay, if states have a state beet inspection process that is equal to that of federal inspection, meaning you're providing the same level of consumer protection that the feds are, which is the only way that they'll sign off on the MOU even to do state inspection, why couldn't we ship that product across state lines? We've not been able to get that successfully completed for whatever reason. This is a decades-old effort. So as far as the federal effort to change this, the federal statutes to allow interstate commerce with the state meat inspection facility, we've not been able to gain any grounds in that respect. You're absolutely correct in all of your summarization of how the system works. We do have an MOU with USDA that allows our inspectors to stamp that carcass, and then that product can be sold within the boundaries of the state of Wyoming. It cannot be sold across state lines. The caveat here is that if USDA provides inspection, they do so only in a federal plant, meaning you've got to submit your blueprints to the USDA and they sign off on the whole operation top to bottom and everywhere in between. That's where we are, unfortunately, at this point in time. And so we don't have any ability right now to provide any state inspection that allows interstate commerce of our meat.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we do have one processing plant that processes meat under federal inspection, but we don't have any for slaughter at this point in time.
Representative Walters.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Do you charge any sort of fees, or could you charge any sort of an inspection fee for these animals as they're being processed?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Walters, there is no fee for inspection for the interstate meat program.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you charge a fee if you wanted to? Or is there anything prohibiting that as a way to generate a little bit of revenue for your agency and cover the cost of these inspections and the folks that are out doing this work, and possibly then make this inspection available to more plants throughout the state if it was generating revenue?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I suppose technically we probably could develop an inspection fee schedule. We've operated under the MOU where we have delegated federal authority, so essentially you have, you know, the feds writing regulations that we're checking, and USDA does pay for a significant portion of our inspection activities already. And so that's where the bulk of our funding comes from to do our state meat inspection program. And we haven't pursued charging our processors to come in and carry out the requirement. But technically, I think we could.
Senator,
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Miyamoto, that goes right along the line. I was going to ask, I see you're 100% federal funded. Is it actually 100%, or you pay part of it? I was looking down at the bottom of B on the deal. Shows 100% federal funding. Are these all federal? So do you have a problem adding more where they're federal? What's the process to add more? Back to having backlogs, is what's holding this up if it's federal funding?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Driscoll, the grant amount that we get from USDA varies from year to year sometimes. And so whether or not we would be able to support additional inspectors based on those soft dollars would be a question that could only be answered year to year. But we could certainly propose it. It's a grant.
So you said the significant amount of the inspectors are paid by federal dollars. What percentage, roughly, on a regular basis?
We average 20%.
Shows 100% in the workbook.
It's basically
would you take a shot at that?
That's just for these two.
Mr. Chairman, if it's easier, I think it's best to just turn this over to Julie.
Oh, that's a good idea. Thanks.
Mr. Chairman, the way the meat inspection program grant works is they reimburse us for 100% of any meat-related costs associated with our Equal to status. Our grant does vary in dollar amount. So currently, this last grant that we just completed was $405,000. And we took almost all of that grant, not quite, but almost all of that grant. We never know, like right now I'm in a new grant period and I don't know what the dollar amount is that they're going to fund us at this time. And sometimes we're halfway through a grant period before we know. The process that we would go through is if we were to hire another, like this one, an AWAC inspector, since this would be a new one, we would go through a B11 process during mid-session and go ahead and get that approved to go ahead and get someone up and going into that process.
Go ahead.
You take in $405,000, it shows $123,000. What are we doing with the other close to $300,000, $280,000? Well, where does it go?
Mr. Chairman, I'm assuming you're asking about the AWAC position is for $123,000?
Correct.
That is the amount that this position has. We have other inspectors throughout the state that also inspect meat plants. There's approximately 14 state meat inspected plants in the state, so we have inspectors throughout the state that work in different meat plants. And it also goes to any of our travel costs. If we have to have a contract vet come in, those are the types of expenses that are allowable under this grant.
Representative Lauren Wilson.
Thank you. Director, could you just, so I see the AWAC, we're on page 33, but these other inspectors, is that somewhere else? I am not finding it. Is there a narrative and a discussion of the other, the non-AWAC inspectors? Or how does that, I'm feeling a little at sea here.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, I think that the narrative that you're looking for may be on page 31. We have, in short, we have 20 inspectors that provide service to these. We have 14 state-inspected meat plants, and then we have an additional 16, I believe, custom-exempt plants that also require some level of inspection but not day-to-day inspection.
Go ahead, please.
Following along and looking at the numbers, if we do it, $405,000 is $238 a head to inspect at the state, which seems incredulous to me that we could be investing that way. $238 a head, if you take $405,000 divided by the 1,700 animals, comes out $238 a head. It seems like an incredible amount of money per head on inspection. Then the second one is your inspectors are going around. Are these full-time inspectors? Do they do other ag inspections, or what do they do? Because I know, like, our local plant, a couple days a week, maybe a few head.
Mr. Chairman, the 17, that's just one plant that is inspecting that much. They also have to be there for processing of the meat, so they have to be there duly. They have to be there the entire time any slaughter is taking place. But any time the meat facility is processing, they have to be in that day. And so that also takes quite a bit of the time of that inspector. The rest of all of our inspectors, with the exception of this AWAC inspector, also have other duties of all food establishments in the state, daycares, pools, any of that type of stuff. So they don't. With the exception of the AWAC inspector, everyone else performs a much smaller amount towards the meat program. This person we have just dedicated to that program.
Thank you. Follow up. How many head a year do we inspect for slaughter?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Driscoll, that's something that we can provide for you, but I don't have it with
me today. I appreciate
that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. Senator Lynn.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and I apologize for this not quite being my wheelhouse, but I, in reading at the bottom of page 31, it strikes me that some of what we're doing in that consumer health services part of what you do. Where's the overlap with the county public health operations? How does that work?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Landon, the overlap is that we have six counties that have delegated authority from us to carry out state statutes relating to food safety inspections. And so essentially we have this chain where we have delegated authority from USDA for some of these programs, and we have delegated authority from FDA for other programs. And then in turn, we can delegate that authority to the local level if they would like to do that. So in six of our counties, we do have those agreements in place.
Mr. Chairman, just for clarification then, so some counties choose not to do that, and then it's up to the state to get up there, do the traveling, get it done.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions? All right, please proceed.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I believe we were on page 34, and this represents our other proposed Section 320 reduction, and this is for a CHS inspector, and this is in the commercial food inspection realm, not the state meat inspection realm. So this is our other Section 320 proposal. Moving on.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, I didn't have time to look up. I think, is this in the public health statutes? And what's the fee that you charge for a – is this the only inspection that a commercial food operation gets, and what is the fee for that?
Mr. Chairman, our commercial food inspections for initial licensure is $100, and then for renewal is $50. If they're a temporary food establishment, then that charge is $25.
That's what I had to pay when I did my chili cook-off.
And did they pass you? Mr. Chairman, Director, so this is the only – is there any other food inspection that takes place through, like, the Department of Health, the public health offices in the county, or is it just this? Do you know?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, as far as I'm aware, this is the only inspection that's required for commercial food establishments.
Representative Larson.
Mr. Chairman, so in that part of the world from whence I come, you've got it covered.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we'll this proposal, I don't think we'll know exactly what the impacts will be for a while. We have other inspectors in the area, and we've been putting them in travel status more frequently to try to keep our inspection frequencies going. But we haven't been under this cycle for very long. I think we can do it.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman. Okay, so I'm looking on page 34 under C, reduction impact. The inspections are risk-based, therefore, of the 200 establishments and so on. So there are only 200 establishments, food service establishments in the state of Wyoming? That seems rather small. Or is that just the only – you only consider 200 of them to be risky?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, I see how that could be confusing. This inspector – did 200 inspections, and
they were all risky,
and they're risk based in that if the inspector goes in there and finds an item that requires follow up, what we try to do is give that operator time to get that situation rectified, and then we would do a follow up visit before we would take any kind of action. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When were those fees last adjusted or increased or decreased? But I'm guessing it would have been an increase. When did that last take?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we would have to check on the fee schedule. It hasn't been in my time at the Department of Ag. They've been at that level for as long as I've been at the department.
All right. Please proceed.
We should sure do that.
Okay. On page 39, you'll find the technical services section budget. And we have one exception budget item on page 41. And this is the hemp farming pilot project startup proposal. The governor did not recommend funding this exception budget item.
I think we can concur with that.
On page 45, we have our analytical services section budget, and we do have exception budget items related to this unit. The first one you can find on page 46. And this is called the Ultra Pure Water System. And this exception budget item is more related to infrastructure of the lab itself. It's kind of like the plumbing in the lab. Ultra Pure Water is something that most labs use for it's beyond distilled water, and it's plumbed in. And our system is old and simply needs to be replaced. We're having to tinker with it quite a bit to try to get any functionality out of it all. And so that is that's our exception budget request, and the governor did recommend approval of this item.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Driscoll.
Doug, a quick rundown of what they do, and could these services be done at UW?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, our lab is co-located with the University of Wyoming, and the capabilities of university labs, they may or may not be able to provide the same level of service that we do. Without knowing the exact lab and what equipment's available, it would be hard for me to answer. But the types of work that are conducted at the Analytical Services Lab is they provide the background information for a couple of our different divisions. So In our technical services division, as an example, they can go into a feed store and they can take samples of feed and provide truth in labeling checks. So they can take a sample of feed and submit it to the lab and find out, okay, this company that wants to sell this supplement or this livestock feed in Wyoming, are they being truthful in the labeling? Is what they're saying is in the bag really in the bag? And so we do that for fertilizer, and we do that for
I think the question was, if this is co-located at UW, and they probably want the purified water as well, and they will use it, or is it only you're going to be using it? Are UW folks going to be using it? Should this be a co-expense? That's where we really, I think, is the basis of the inquiry. So.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Driscoll, I apologize that I misconstrued the question. This would only serve our lab takes up the second floor of the lab building, and so this would be confined to use in our lab.
So my question is it already piped in there, and that would just be running a pipe and then paying for the water versus installing a whole new process. We'd kind of like to know more about it. We're going to need a microphone, so. We got one coming to you. Thank you. And please identify yourself.
Teresa Jarvis from the Analytical Services Lab.
Thank
I'm the
you,
laboratory
sir.
Manager. Mr. Chairman, the system that we're looking for is an ultra-pure system. So we have a reverse osmosis unit in our mechanical room that provides fairly pure water, but we also have a smaller system that hooks into that ultra-pure water inside our laboratory that has a system of filters and UV lights that provides water that is pure to the part per trillion level that aids us with making reagents for and standards and controls for our heavy metal testing, the feed and fertilizer testing, all the testing that we're doing in the laboratory uses that system. So the option for us, if we don't have that, is to purchase it from one of our laboratory vendors, and that is where the expense comes in at that point.
Any follow-up?
Mr. Chairman,
yeah,
one.
So,
Let's let him.
Okay. Could you provide me a list of what all samples you sample through the year, numbers of them, and what they are, feed samples or chemical samples or whatever, so we can kind of see scope of what you're doing and how you're doing it? Thanks.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Jarvis. On that, if I could pick your brain a little more. So if you're having to buy that commercially, that water that we'd be able to get through the pure water system, how long would it take to pure, I mean, return on investment, what kind of cost does it take to buy that commercially versus to pay for that equipment?
So, Mr. Chairman, we've looked at that, and the cost of that would be $13,000 in a biennium. So in a biennium, it would be paid for, and we would expect a system to last 8 to 10 years.
So, okay, thank you.
Senator Lamb.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just real quickly, Director, maybe I should already know this, but this lab that we're referring to right now, are there any cross opportunities for educational things that take place in there, or is this separate and distinct away from all of UW operations? I just don't know that, so.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Landon, we have had students that have come in and run some different analysis in the lab before for different purposes, but it's not a day-to-day type of opportunity that's provided as part of like a university coursework. Now, that being said, we do have a proposal in here. One of our exception budget items relating to industrial hemp farming proposed using part of our exception budget to go and get a graduate student who would then work in the lab to do the analysis on those samples. So we've had projects like that before, but it's not something that occurs all the time. Okay, Mr. Chairman. Our next exception budget item can be found on page 47. And this is for just other equipment, also affiliated with the analytical services lab that requires some updating, some replacement. And the first one is we need a new nitrogen analyzer, just because it's old and getting to the end of its service life. And we also need a digestion block and a Latchett 8500 that tests for ammonia and cyanide in drinking water to maintain our agreements with EPA for safe drinking water standards. But we provide that service for wells that are drilled around the state. On page 48, we have another exception budget item relating to...
Sorry, Director. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. So this last piece is part of testing drinking water around the state, so if you want to send a sample in, generally you have to pay for that, right? And if you do, when was the last time that fee structure was looked at? And is there a way to capture a little more out of that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, we'd have to do some research on our fee schedule for the lab, because I can't answer the question off the top of my head about.
Well, then let's just go to the next step. Then, if you have a fee structure, where do those fees go, and do you have a sinking fund for equipment replacement or anything like that?
No, Mr. Chairman, they just revert to the general fund.
So they go to us.
Yeah.
So you definitely should increase it. Representative Larson.
And then also, how much was reverted? I mean, are we talking like $5,000 a year?
Mr. Chairman, we're looking at about $70,000 per biennium. Yeah.
And is that in the budget book?
Yes.
What page are you looking at? That's what I'm curious about.
Page 45.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, I see.
And they're, Mr. Chairman, they're deposited straight into the general fund. Right. They don't come into our budget at all. They just go straight there.
Well, don't expect them back.
Mr. Chairman, I wasn't.
Okay, go ahead.
On page 48, you'll see another exception budget item related to industrial hemp farming. This was for equipment to analyze for THC content and industrial hemp. The governor did not recommend funding this exception budget item. On page 51, we have our seed laboratory budget. We have no exception budget items related to that unit. And on page 54, we have our groundwater state management plan together with EPA, and we have no exception budget items related to that unit. On page 57, we have our rabies management plan budget, and we have no exception budget items related to that unit. On page 59, we have our rodent and predator control budget, and we have no exception budget items related to that unit.
I don't know if that's enough money just to keep track of the rodents on Driscoll's ranch. Let alone any place else.
Mr. Chairman, on page 62, we have our grain warehouse budget, and we have no exception budget items for this unit. On page 65, we have our Animal Damage Management Board budget, and we have no exception budget items for this unit. On page 70, we have our Consumer Health Services Food License Program budget. We have no exception budget items for this unit. On page 73, we have our Consumer Health Services Pool License Program, and we also have no exception budget items for this unit. On page 76, we have our APHIS budget, and we do have a budget cleanup item, an exception budget item, as can be found on page 77.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Co-Chair.
That's something I've always been curious about, is the Department of Ag inspecting pools. And I'm kind of wondering why that wouldn't be the business of the county, local county health officer.
Mr. Chairman, it's a service that the Consumer Health Services Division of the Department of Ag has provided for decades now. And in analyzing it, we think that it was just one of those areas where efficiencies could be gained because we had inspectors generally located, you know, distributed around the state to do that kind of work, and they do sanitation types of investigations with commercial food establishments, and so I'm not sure how that came to be, but it certainly is in our purview to do the pool inspections, and we've just carried on doing them. So your guess may be as good as mine about why it resides with the Department of Ag.
All right, thank you. You're just not trying to make a grab for big pool or something like that.
Mr. Chairman, no, I'm certainly not.
Okay.
So on page 77, we have a budget cleanup item for your consideration, and we would like to remove our APHIS budget line item. APHIS can directly interact with the University of Wyoming, and we don't need to play middleman in this transfer of funds anymore. So now that they have that authority, we would just like to request
renewal. So would they apply for the federal grant, or the?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay.
Our next budget's on page 80, and this is for our natural resource and policy section budget. We have no exception budget items for this unit. On page 84, we have our emergency insect management program budget.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just want to thank the Department of Ag once again for the, for their Natural Resource Services section and the work you all do to help all of us producers out around the state. So just a thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, thanks so much for letting us know and for that. That's greatly appreciated.
On page 84, we have our Emergency Insect Management Program budget. We have no exception budget items for this unit. On page 87, we have our pesticide registration budget, and we have no exception budget items for this budget. On page 91, we have our State Fair section budget, and we do have exception budget items, as can be found starting on page 93, and we're asking for $400,000 for biennialization reversal in order to maintain our state fair operations.
So I'm looking at page 92, and what I'm curious about is your estimated incomes for the following biennium are lower, even though you have higher fees, by about $500,000. So just explain how you came up with your revenue projections and why.
Mr. Chairman, we have been analyzing our revenues versus our expenses for the state fair for a number of years, and we have taken efforts to increase our fees for the past 2 years. So for the 2016 fair, we had some fairly significant fee increases, and then we followed that up after last year's session with increasing fees again to try to see what impact that would have on our total revenue generation. Unfortunately, State Fair seems to go the way of the economy of Douglas, more or less. I think that one thing that we've kind of learned through this process is as goes the economy of Douglas, so goes the State Fair. So despite the fact that we have increased our fees significantly, our revenues are down. Now, that being said, we do have some plans to try to help close the gap with State Fair. I think we're going to have to look very seriously at condensing the State Fair. It's traditionally been an 8-day event, and we're looking at different scenarios now of trying to really pare down the number of days that State Fair runs, in order to kind of close that gap, because we're not getting there with increasing fees to try to make up enough revenue.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Director, if you could be more specific on the increase of fees. So just kind of skimming the website, I can see that there's, the admission fee of $2. There's vendor fees for, like exhibit stalls. There's the entry fees from the kids for, rabbits and cows and such like, and I don't know if there are other things. So could you just flesh that out a little bit about what fees were increased? And
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, I think maybe the best way to answer this would, I can provide you some overarching philosophy of what the Board of Ag and the State Fair Advisory Board kind of discussed as they were going through the fee structure, and then I would ask our state fair manager to add any specifics that may help to clarify. But generally speaking, as we were looking at fees, the concern of the Board of Ag and one of the things within the department that we were very conscious of is that we didn't want to impact the youth exhibitors and competitors more than necessary. We knew that some modest increases may be in order, but we tried to focus on those fees that provide more a level of convenience than a requirement. So examples of that would be feed passes. These are permits that allow you to get closer to the building to get straw or hay into livestock as you're showing. Those are convenience fees. You don't necessarily have to have them in order to participate. Golf carts are another one that's got a significant increase in fees over the past several years. You don't have to have a golf cart at the Wyoming State Fair. Almost no matter what we do with those golf cart fees, we rent them all out. Another example would be fees for, oh, I lost my train of thought. What were the other fees that we had that, that we kind of focused on? Yeah, camping. That was the other one that I was looking at. Our RV spots for camping and keeping the camper on the grounds during the event were another area that we went a little bit higher than we didn't just do an across the board increase on our fees. James, do you have any more that you would like to add to that conversation?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, we historically our fees.
I'm sorry, James Goodrich, Wyoming State Fair Director. Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, historically our youth entry fees, livestock entry fees, for instance, as Director Miyamoto mentioned, had been historically low. We did increase those as well, many times 100%. It varied up in 50%, 100%. And larger increases, of course, with those fees that he had already mentioned. So, again, many of those that it had been historically low, we increased those as well. Additionally, prior to the 2016 fair, we had raised camping at that point and had raised, vendor space rental fees. And in addition, our off-season, rental rates for buildings and arenas and so forth, in the summer of 2016, we did a brief study of comparative facilities statewide and brought our fees up to a comparable level with similar, what we felt were similar facilities statewide, and tried to use a cross-section around the state. And at that point, we raised those approximately 15% at that point in time to get on par with what we felt were comparable facilities and comparable rates. Always a difference in the way different counties and municipalities and so forth price their facilities, but we were able to come very close, we felt, with that study.
Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Director, what's the average daily attendance and the total attendance at the State Fair on a yearly basis?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schwartz.
James, do you have a... I have a ballpark, but yours is probably better than mine.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schwartz, our 2017 fair attendance was 41,100 over the 8-day run of the fair, and that has decreased slightly from what we were several years earlier. We've stayed with the same formula for calculating that. Into that figure are hard numbers for ticketed events and paid grounds admissions and so forth. And then within that, there are also estimates, daily estimates for the setup days at the beginning of the fair, where we don't charge admission for those people that are on grounds there setting up and still partaking in some of the activities that are there and so forth. But we use that same formula on an annual basis.
Senator Landon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This might be a good time, and it's probably directed at the director of our state fair, maybe to both of you. But I've met with a couple of constituents and had good visits about the state fair. And my heart is certainly there, but I went away wondering what's going on around the rest of the country. What's going on with state fairs out there? And my concern is that, as with quite a bit of the rural America that I grew up in over in Daniel, Wyoming, continues to change. And I just wonder, what are we the only ones that are kind of suffering from gates going down?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Landon, we are not alone in this situation. I think we are in Wyoming. I think it's exacerbated at this point by our sparse population and our long distances of travel more than anything. There have been states that have also struggled, states and counties and regional events as well. And I believe you mentioned a very good point in that also is the changing population. One of the things we learned in our listening sessions that we did around the state this previous fall was that 4-H educators and FFA vocational ag instructors, I believe, confirmed that in the change in the students that they have and the habits and patterns of those people and their families for the amount of events that they can attend and the varied interests that they are having to satisfy and so forth. And we are feeling some of the effects of that. But I can honestly say that nationwide, and as you know, we're a member of several associations and organizations, and we hear the same thing as we attend those meetings and try to address those differences and those changes.
Mr. Chairman, just a quick follow-up. I appreciate that answer because it's spot on to all the things I've been thinking about coming into this budget work that we're set to do. You know, I think our young generations are a little different than they were way back when I rode horses to school. It was, you know, during the summer nowadays, a lot of our kids are specializing, and they're working on things other than 4-H and other than, dog collars and leather work and raising a lamb or whatever. So, anyway, thank you. It's just something I've been a little concerned about. So, thanks.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, or maybe for the State Fair specifically, back to the attendance. Do you have any way of knowing, or maybe just an anecdotal assessment from your experience, the 41,000 or so that attended this time and past years, I think, have been 50 or 60,000. Would you say that the attendees are people who, could go to a Jason Aldean concert, or they could go to the State Fair and they're going there for entertainment? Or is this like 5,000 exhibitors, mothers who come 8 days, 5,000 times 8 equals 40,000? I mean, do you have a sense of who the attendees are?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, we do have some demographic material available that was done. We did a patron survey in the years 2012, 13, and 14. And we have not done that since, but we have some very good information available from that we can share. What I can say just off the top of my head is that it's a very mixed picture that we do have. There are people that come strictly for entertainment, and then we do have a large contingent, obviously, that are family members of not only those youth members participating, but friends and family of open class exhibitors with other areas of the fair that come to exhibit also. So it's a gathering of a community gathering of the state of sorts, and then as well, we do advertise nationally as part of our program with Converse County tourism dollar, lodging tax dollars, and so forth. We advertise nationally, and we do get out of state attendees as well that are within our geographic region.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman. Mr. Co-Chair. Go ahead.
Oh, I've got two questions. One has to do with scheduling. My understanding is a whole bunch of counties, and I'm looking for you to tell me, have their county fairs the week before the state fair starts. Is that all the counties, most of the counties, some of the counties?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Co-Chair, Senator Burns, I would classify that as some of the counties. We have several that bump right up against us. There, I believe there's three in the state. And then there's maybe half of the counties within the state are the week before, but don't bump right up against us. And then probably, the other half are, in weeks preceding anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks out.
In July.
In July, correct.
Okay, so you've got the county fairs, for instance, Campbell County, Sweetwater County are the two I'm familiar with. They have their county fairs, and then within a couple of days, the kids who have won there then take their livestock or whatever to Douglas to compete on the statewide level. And I understand that portion of it. The one I don't understand in terms of scheduling is the state high school finals rodeo. And I believe that alternates between Rock Springs and Gillette. 2 years here, 2 years there. Does that interfere with the state fair, especially the rodeo aspect?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, I believe probably what you're referring to is the National High School Finals Rodeo.
Okay, yeah, did I say state? I meant national.
Yes, and you're correct. That is in a rotation right now, and that is earlier in the season and does not have any effect on our state fair schedule whatsoever.
Okay, good. That's a good thing. Now, the other question I had was I've had a couple of constituents call me up, say they were at a meeting in Buffalo where they were told to tell me that if they didn't get the exception requests here, that the state fair was going to close up shop, and that if I didn't vote for the exception request, there was going to be no state fair. Now, were they told that, or are they just making that up to me? Because it's two completely different constituents.
Mr. Chairman, yes. If you look on page 94 of our exception budget request, 93. That's the predicament that we're in. We didn't tell anybody to say that necessarily, but when we prepared our exception budget request, we're just to the point now where we hosted the least expensive fair we had in recent memory last year, and our total for that is well beyond what we could do without the funding that we entered the 17-18 biennium with. This is where we are.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. You know, Doug, as you get into the numbers, when I look at page 90, it shows a general fund. I guess just go over the numbers. So it shows a negative $800,000, which is the special revenue. So that's taking, you know, basically eliminating the mandate for the $400,000 a year in special revenue dollars. And then it's coming back with an amount that is more than $1 million, you know, which is different things up through the line there. But are you needing more money than we took away last time in special revenue? And just kind of explain, if we are, why there's more of that needing to come in now and what the case is for that, if you would, please.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, if it's all right with you, I'll have Julie walk you through the numbers of how we got to this level.
Mr. Chairman, if you do look at page 93 and 94, we do have two exception budget requests. The first is for the reversal of the biennialization, the additional $400,000. You'll recall during the last session, our budget was reduced, the state fair budget was reduced by $400,000. We were later told that that was cut would be doubled to this $400,000. And looking at our numbers, everything that we worked out, if we lose the $800,000 in total, plus the one-time funding that we had received during the last session, we really don't believe there's any way that we could put on a fair if we don't receive the reversal of the biennialization. On page 94, we have the operational funds request, and that request is to return the original $400,000 that was taken during the last session and also increase another $250,000. And what this will do, this will get us back to where we started our BFY 17 budget before any of those, once that was passed during the last session. It gets us back to that number. We're not asking for any increases in that area. The director has talked about that, you know, how much it does cost to put on a fair. But right now, our first attempt is to get this back to where we were at the very beginning of BFY 17. So if you look at priorities number one and priorities number six, that gets us back to where we started with our original BFY 17 budget with the Wyoming State Fair.
Here on this, thanks. So did you guys sustain a penny plan, 8% in this unit? And if so, it looks like you're trying to revert back to before we did any cuts whatsoever, because you're going back to the 17-18 standard budget?
Not the standard budget, Mr. Chairman. The budget that was passed is what this is going back to. Not to our original standard budget, but what was actually authorized by this body at the beginning of BFY 17. This budget did only took a $10,000 cut as part of the penny plans and biennial and all the other cuts that were taken as part of this. And that's because we knew that this budget could not we could not continue to have a fair and maintain the Wyoming State Fairgrounds with taking any larger cuts out of that budget. So other units within the department took a lot more of those cuts.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow along the line, so I see a number thrown out here on page 93 of $350,000 a year for an event. Now, is that an estimation of what a state fair could cost? Is that what a state fair actually did cost? And then explain how that relates to the numbers you just said that you need, because it's not – it doesn't add up in my mind.
Mr. Chairman, what we did is we did an analysis of how this budget was given to us as a standard budget. And if you look, let me just get you the right page number to help guide us through this conversation.
Mr. Chairman, it may take a separate sheet of paper.
What we did, we can get you a handout that would show you how we came to our number of that that dollar amount. In the past, the as you'll see on this budget, that the standard budget for the Wyoming State Fair showed that there would be $2 million of general fund and almost $1.3 million of other funds. And what we did is we analyzed how much money we had left.
You're referring to page 90 or you're referring to?
97.
97.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. I'm just walking through, looking at how this budget is now structured financially as a result of our standard budget. So what we have asked for is, what we looked at is how much money we have left in our revenue account. And right now we have approximately $715,000. And this budget requires us to put in almost $3 million. And so we don't have enough money within that fund in order to fund the budget that would be appropriated to us if this budget were to go through as the standard budget without any of our exception budget requests in it. Therefore, we believe we would not be able to have a fair. If you look at the budget as a whole, you'll notice that $1.3 million of this budget is actually for salaries. So we cannot use that money for anything but for the 8 full-time staff that we have and the 3 seasonals that we have. So
well, I think you could B11 it pretty easy. We could help you move it around.
Well, technically, Mr. Chairman, we're not allowed to move money out of the 100 series once it's appropriated to us. You have to look at what our budget is right off the top. And that amount comes right off the top and is not part of the actual putting on of the Wyoming State Fair. That's the part of us doing a state fair, preparing for a state fair, taking care of the grounds on the state fair, and keeping everything at the state fair running. But that's not money that can be used to actually fund a fair. So when you look at all the amounts that we have, you also have to look at some of the other ongoing costs that the Wyoming State Fair has that are also not used to put on a fair. And that is things like utilities, which is in your 200 series, as well as real property repair and maintenance, and grounding and building and ground supplies that are necessary. So if we take all of those types of things into account, based on the budget that we have of the 715 is all that we can actually put into the fair, that only leaves us about $730,000 to put on two fairs, which gets us down to that $300,000 number that you talked about. Last year we put on a fair that was greatly reduced in expenditures. Preliminarily, I'm not done preparing that report. We're still paying a few bills and taking care of a few things, but preliminarily we spent about $700,000 for one fair, and that is greatly reduced from about the $850,000 we spent the year before. And then, not to take into account the 2 years before that, we spent over $1 million to put on a fair, the type of fair that most people are expecting us to have. And so what we've done internally with the director Miyamoto's direction is really look at the types of things we have on grounds, looking at how we can reduce those expenditures, making sure our contracts are well within, just within the requirements that we need, that there's nothing extra in there. So we've cut a lot of the different things that we've had at the fair in order to come down within the budget that we had. And we got to this point we just had the 100th fair not that long ago. I'm sure all of you remember. And that year we had fundraised, and we had a lot of really great things on grounds, and people really excited about the fair at that time. And the one thing you try really hard not to do is have a year the next year that you take a nosedive. And so the direction of some different people, we were trying to keep that up to some degree and not fall off the cliff right away. But as you can tell, we've come down, $300,000 in expenses, and we just don't believe that kind of money is something that we can do. So I know that was a long answer to your question, but I do not believe without the return of the biennialization amount that we will be able to sustain a fair next year. And hopefully I'll be able to give you some information, hopefully the worksheets that I can prepare for you to let you see how we've come to those numbers.
So, Mr. Chairman, just a quick follow-up. So can I get it $700,000 roughly to put on a fair? The $350,000 number is if you had to live within this budget, that's what it would take. That's what you'd have available to put on a fair. My other question is 11 employees, and what do they do for the course of the year, and do you have an accounting of that time? That seems like a lot of employees and I don't know, how much was it? It was $1.4
million? $1.3, yes, Mr. Chairman.
$1.376 million in wages to put on a $700,000, twice the cost of the fair in full-time wages. So it would be about the same, actually, because it's $700,000 a year, $700,000 a fair.
So, yeah, it's two fairs.
Yeah, two fairs. So just is there a good accounting? Has there been a good hard review of the amount of personnel in this budget and whether that personnel is all needed? And
Mr. Chairman, we have 8 full-time staff at the Wyoming State Fair. That includes our State Fair manager, James Goodrich, who's here with us today. We have an assistant manager that oversees the HR and the accounting and all of that, the staff that are there. We have 2 office staff people. What they do throughout the year is pay the bills, do any of the bookings for non-fair time events. It takes the state fair staff a year. Once the fair's done, we start preparing for the next, and so they're working at that point in time on judges, looking at that different type of stuff. We also have 4 maintenance staff, 1 supervisor, and 3 staff, and they're responsible for taking care of all of the state fair grounds and all of the buildings that are on grounds. year-round. That includes painting, maintenance on buildings, snow removal, anything that needs to make sure that those buildings are being kept to the best of our abilities. That's a state asset that is sitting up there, and so we do take that very seriously. The other three positions are seasonal positions, and those are people that come on strictly in the summer, and they come on to work, help us more with the mowing and the watering and the building setup and teardowns for all of the different events that occur on the Wyoming State Fairgrounds, as well as set up and tear down for the Wyoming State Fair. And Mr. Director, and do you have some more you'd like to add?
Mr. Chairman, if I could just interject a little bit. We also account for the number of off-season events that we host on the fairgrounds, and over the past several years, we've averaged more than 500 event days, excluding the fair. And so these are things like weddings and funerals and meetings that we host, and 4-H shoots and youth hockey and all of these things that come onto the grounds that not during the fair, but that does require set up and tear down by our four staff. The state fairgrounds is comprised of about 100 acres and 60 different buildings. So that's what those four maintenance guys are doing: snow removal, garbage removal, and upkeep of those buildings year round.
So thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, so those off-season events, do they cover the cost of what we have in expenses for the facility, the labor, the whatnot? Just for
Mr.
the off-season?
Chairman, Representative Larson, I think that we've done some analytics on what it takes to daylight those, and James may have a better idea for you.
Mr. Chairman.
Double switch.
Mr.
Is it on?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, in some cases those events cover the cost, and in other cases they don't. On an annual basis, they don't. But as I mentioned earlier in our fee adjustment that we did in 2016, we got on par with what we felt the market would stand, and that's about where we are. I think it's a similar situation with many of our fees for fair time, that cafeteria, dorm stay, entry fees, those type of things. It's a similar situation with these off-season rental rates that we are all the market. We're at right where the market will stand, and so. The costs that go into that, we have approximately 60 structures, which that's from the smallest little guard shack to our largest events pavilions, and utilities are expensive. Labor to prepare and clean those up is expensive, and many times our event producers and our clientele cannot stand the rental rate for what it would take to make those events pay for themselves.
Mm-hmm. So have you ever looked at not doing off-season events? And just, I mean, I don't know what the numbers are, but if we knew that the fair paid for itself, we know that what you're telling me is that the fair is maybe a break-even or a little over type event, and the off-season loses money. And so do we come back and have you ever looked at that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, we have looked at that at times. I can't sit here and tell you that we have looked at that seriously just because of the amount of demand for events and activities that we have within the community, and we service those upon demand, and that's historically what we have done.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Please.
Well, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate that it's an important part of the community, but can we do it at a loss?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, I think that's a very legitimate question. I don't know how to answer that other than other than what I have. It's difficult to hold the line on maintaining those clients and those events, and also meeting those costs that we've done our best to control, but we haven't been able to bridge that gap.
So I have a question on the on page 99. You have estimated revenues on the non-fair time, $300,000. Yet on the next page, you have on your budget, you're budgeting $179,000. So I don't understand how those two numbers correlate.
So, you have it?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Can you tell me? I got the $300 amount. What was the other one you were looking at?
Well, then if you go to what your non-fair use fees. You have $179,000, so you're $120,000 short, it seems to me, on revenues, on your use fees. Or you have other revenues that don't show on that page. I just don't understand how those jive.
Page 100. Expenditure totals.
Yeah, so, well, you're budgeting less than what you make, then.
Oh. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, I apologize for taking so long to figure out where you were. Most of the time, Mr. Chairman, we do a B-11 process when we hit that $179,000 through the governor's office to bring in those additional funds. And so we don't just spend $179,000. We actually spend closer to this other. We've just not done a budget increase within through the formal process to take care of that.
So, and what I really haven't heard is the explanation of you plan to go from 8 to 5, you want to add Miss Rodeo, you want to add PRC event to get more people there and get more interest. But in order to do that, you need more money, in essence, in order to make this thing. But at some point, you want to start to make it cost flow or work better. I mean, do you have a business plan concept? Is it just an idea you're throwing out? How did you get the 250? What's your implementation time frame? What can we reasonably expect to see in the future?
Mr. Chairman, we have analyzed, do we have a business plan? We do. It's contingent upon, you know, the level of funding that we get. And so right now the state fair staff is working up multiple scenarios based on a funding level about how much fair we can support. We always have hosted a PRCA event, or at least in the recent past. That's nothing new that we're trying to bring into the fair. It's just something that we're trying to maintain. And we have changed the days of offering to try to catch cowboys going from here to there, and trying to make it more efficient so that we can get a higher quality of participant to come into the event with no more expenditure of money. The idea about reducing or trying to condense the fair from 8 days down to 5 is simply an attempt to try to – we see the expenses of hosting a fair continually going up. These contracts get bigger for entertainment every year. They are growing exponentially nationwide. And the only way we see to be able to try to limit the amount of expenditures that we have is to get our – contract mandates down across a number of different sectors. So show coordinators, if we only have to have them for 5 days instead of 8, we expect that we could host as many shows as we possibly can for youth exhibits and competitions without gutting everything. And that won't be popular with everybody, obviously. I mean, I think that the town of Douglas and the county would like that fair to go on for as long as possible to try to capture some revenue-generating potential in the community, but at some point we've got to figure out what our most efficient offering is. So we've tried different mechanisms over the past several years to get our expenses down as much as we can, and we've got some offers from some of our breed associations that may be willing to help us out and sponsor their own open shows. These are all ideas that we're pursuing, but we would like to be able to host a fair that we could reasonably say still is a fair, still is something that's a state event.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Director, I understand that the Joint Agriculture Committee has got a bill in the works, not quite, maybe quite hit the screen yet, but how far does what's in that bill carry you toward where you're trying to go? Do you have a sense of that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, what the bill would do is essentially increase the priority of revenue generation for that campus. I mean, in the past, we were working under a model that said, okay, it's the responsibility of the Department of Agriculture to host a Wyoming State Fair. And in the past, as you've heard today, a lot of our facility rentals are traditional rentals that have been going on for years. So if we have a roping event that we've hosted forever because it's something that's endemic to Converse County, and they do this every year and they keep coming back, and if they're first in time, we pencil them in the book and they can rent the arena for their event, and it's just a traditional thing. Weddings are the same way, these types of things. But there's never been, we haven't ever told somebody, no, you can't do your roping because we're going to try to optimize the revenue-generating potential of the campus. And we're going to try to bring in these much larger revenue-generating conventions or trade shows or whatever they happen to be. And so I think that's what the bill does. It says we now want you to focus more on generating revenue throughout the 51 weeks of the year to support that 52nd week, that week of State Fair. Will it work or not? I don't know that. But we certainly have got the message that, you know, try to generate as much revenue as you can and make these grounds as efficient as they can be, which is why we're trying to get to this break-even point of if we can get back to our starting figure for the 17-18 biennium. Meanwhile, we try to come up with some agreements with the breed associations to sponsor their own open shows and reduce the total length of the fair, more activities in less days. I think we can find a ground in there where we can still host a fair and not ask for a massive increase in funding for the event while this legislation plays itself out. And if there's a new priority for a new state fair board to generate revenue, certainly that's not been something that we've been focused on and trying to do in the recent past.
Senator.
Mr. Chairman, Doug, I've got a couple. One, I'd like you to provide us a break out of the expenses and income in the last 2 years, which I'm sure you've got pretty handy. Get those to us pretty broke down. $100,000 a day is quite a bit of money on a fair. I'd like to know kind of where it's gone. Second, having been around there some, what kind of surprises do we got coming up on maintenance? You know, we've got a couple dorms mothballed, and we've got some facilities that are semi-tough. And I think in all fairness, this committee needs to know in the next 5 to 7 years what kind of dollars we're looking at to keep that thing up, because it's obvious you're not going to generate money to keep it up. So what's going to be our long-term costs to maintain those 60 structures? Because, like I said, I went to three of the meetings. It was really helpful for me to understand what's going on. And I think if we're going to deal with this, we need to look at the entire picture and talk about what this is going to take in the next close to decade to either bring those facilities up to snuff or get rid of them, because they're going to affect your profitability trying to put bricks back in buildings that are falling out.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Driscoll, I appreciate the insight. That's certainly weighing heavily on our minds, and we do have analysis that we can provide you for the condition assessment reports and the major maintenance requests for the state fairgrounds. To be quite honest with you, it's not that flattering of a picture, as you can imagine. A lot of those structures are very old, and when it comes down to the breakdown of expenses of a fair and the revenues generated for a fair, I have that. I have a summary document that should fulfill that need, and I'll get it to you.
So, Mr. Co-Chair.
When you were talking about the expenses involved and the number of employees and so forth, isn't there a museum on the site?
Mr. Chairman, there is. There's a Wyoming Pioneer Museum that is that's ran by State Parks and Cultural Resources.
So is there an employee there that was an employee of State Parks?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
That's completely separate from everybody else. Okay. This is state land, right?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
How big?
Mr. Chairman, a little over 100 acres.
Mr. Chairman, 118 acres.
I'm getting there. Where does Douglas County hold their fair?
Mr. Chairman, they hold their fair at this facility.
At the
state fair facility, yes.
How much do they pay?
Mr. Chairman, I can't give you an exact figure. They pay by the building and by the day of activity. I can certainly find that figure for you. But Converse County pays not only for that fair, but other 4-H activities that they hold on the state fairgrounds throughout the year.
Well, what I'm thinking about is, how much other counties spend on their state fairgrounds, on their county fairgrounds. And when you compare that to how much Douglas County's paying for the use of a state facility that the state's paying for the maintenance on, it seems to me, I'll bet Douglas County's making itself getting a real bargain here. And that's something you may want to look at. And the other thing that's always really bothered me about the state fair is the fact they only charge $2 to get into the thing. Anywhere else, to anything else you go to, it's a $5 minimum, and it's been pulling teeth trying to get the state fair to actually take the steps to be self-determining and self-funding, which I can very easily see that happening during the fair itself. The off-fair season, I don't know what else you do or how you do it, but from your language and from what these people have told me, I feel that I'm being given a choice here of either give the exception money or prepare to have no state fair. And if that's the case, then I'm looking at how much money I can pull out of here and put toward Department of Health or other people who really need it. And that's the position this entire committee is in.
Understood, Mr. Chairman.
Yep, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got a couple questions. Bottom of page 93 and in the priority 6 on 94, I'm trying to better understand your narrative versus the numbers and trying to get them all to add up. And so if I read your priority number 1 on page 93, the biennialization reversal. So this committee and the legislature reduced the budget by $400,000 last year. And if we were to take the magic wand and give that money back, your claim is that it would be 400 biennialized to 800,000. Yet in this third line of the narrative on that page 93, it says that biennialization caused you to come up 1.29 million short. So I don't fully understand how 400,000 biennializes to 1.29 million in being short. And then if I go over to page 94 in your priority 6, midway through your narrative or towards the end of your narrative, you ask for the 400,000 that was reduced from the budget a second time in priority 6. So I'm not sure if you're asking for that biennialization in two different, the $400,000 twice, if you're asking for us to biennialize it, whatever. And then if I do the math even further and take my magic wand once more, and we grant you the 400,000 in priority 6 plus the 250 in priority 6, and add that to the 400 in priority 1, I still don't get to the 1.2 million that you are required to fund that you're short. And so all of these numbers the way you have laid them out are extremely confusing to me on what you're, where you're going with this. And so once you answer that, then I have a couple more questions.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Walters, yes, it is confusing because we have special revenue accounts that play into this. And so to get to our total budget of $3.3 million, we have a general fund, and then we have other funds that are these special revenue funds. And what we're saying is if we have a biennialized cut, then you have money that was expected to be paid by the department into our total budget before. If
you add $800,000 to that total, it now equals $1.3 million instead of what used to be more like $400,000 or $500,000. So that's how the money equals out. Before, out of our special revenue fund, we were putting between $400,000 and $500,000 to the cause of the total cost of state fair operations and the buildings and grounds and everything else. If we take $800,000 out of our general fund, that onus is now on the special revenue funds, which bring that total up to 1.3. So that's the difference between what we were paying before out of special revenue and what we would be asked to be paid now if we do biennialize the cut. In total, the department is asking for restoration of just a little over $1 million total. $800,000 from the biennialization of the $400,000 from last year, plus the $250,000 that we got in one-time funding in 17 and 18 to be able to host the fair. So the total budget that we came into 17 and 18 biennium is what we're asking to be brought back to so that we can conduct the fair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay, I think I follow that. So then moving on to your explanation that priority six, you have 25,000. In your explanation, you say you have a customer demand for a higher quality rodeo, et cetera, et cetera. So you want 25,000 for property maintenance, which will take your property maintenance from 124,000 to 150,000 roughly. Then you want 25,000 for equipment maintenance and repairs, and I don't know how you currently have zero for equipment maintenance and repairs, but you need 25,000. And then your 50,000 for utilities is just under, you know, it's 100,000 of that 250 you're requesting. So, you know, like on the utilities, you have 392,000 already in utilities. How is 50,000 in additional utility expenses going to improve or create a higher quality rodeo for you or higher quality experience? Same with the maintenance. And then my other question is, then that leaves 150,000, excuse me, for professional fees. What are these professional fees that you will be paying, or is that going to be going towards? Is there something in mind? Is it purses for the rodeo? Is it sashes for the Miss Rodeo pageant? What are we spending the additional $150,000 on?
Mr. Chairman, the $250,000 that we asked for was money that we had during the last, that was given to us as one-time funding during the last biennium, and it was given to us as one-time funding. And so that was for us to have additional utilities. We have $392,000. The $50,000 helps us to make it towards, closer towards the amount of the utilities we actually pay on grounds. The $150,000 that we have for professional fees, that is the things that we would use for working on the rodeo, the Miss Rodeo Wyoming contest, having entertainment on grounds. Those are things that we've had in the past that we have used. As I said, last biennium we had them as one-time funding. Those were taken out of our standard budget when we developed this one, and so we're asking for them because those costs have not gone away in any of those areas. The building repair and maintenance that you were talking about, equipment repair and maintenance that you were talking about, you are correct. We had asked for that as one-time funding last time, and again, it's zero now because it was taken out as a result of that one-time funding request that we received during the last biennium two sessions ago.
Final question, please.
One further question then. Early in your testimony, Director Miyamoto, you made the comment that the state fair fluctuates with the economy of Douglas, and yet the title is state fair. And why has the state fair not done more to make it a true state fair and expect more sponsorship, more contribution from all communities and counties within the state, all 4-H and FFA organizations, whatever it may be? Because if it's fluctuating that much with the economy of Converse County, it would almost appear that it's a Converse County fair and rodeo that everyone in the state gets to participate in. And so why prior to this has this not been a priority to make this a true state contribution in both the entries as well as in the financial contributions?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Walters, there's been a concerted effort to try to get as much participation statewide as we possibly can. some of our most successful events on the state fairgrounds happen to be like our demolition derby or monster truck type entertainment. Those are about the only things that we can rely on to totally fill the stands. And when that happens, those are typically not people that come from all over the state into the state fairgrounds to view those events. And so the local economy does have a larger impact on our overall numbers than our statewide participants. Now, we do have good participation from our 4-H and FFA members that travel and come to the state fair. And that's a relatively fixed portion of attendees to the fair. And they're the ones that come with their families and they, you know, they won their county fair and so they come in and they do those things. The idea about trying to market to a wider audience statewide and get more participation is something that we've pursued and we'll continue to do that to try to make it as available to folks as we possibly can. People don't travel as much as they used to for these types of things. We're on the heels of Frontier Days. That will have just gotten over for the time that we have State Fair, and that's certainly an impact. We've had a lot of entertainment options that have been available in surrounding communities over the past couple of years. So, you know, the answer to that question is, why haven't we done more to try to market our State Fair and make it more inclusive? I think we've done that. We've still got ground to gain. There's always more that can be done to try to get a more appetizing event for more people.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Something the co-chair said referring to this money could go to Human Services, Department of Health, which is an area I'm more familiar with. As we've made cuts there, our entities that provide those services have gone to fundraising in the private sector to cover that gap. Have you guys made any effort to raise money privately to cover the gap?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schwartz, yes, we pursue sponsorships continually for the state fair, and we've had examples in the past. The example I can come up with was for the 100th fair. We had a matching offer from the legislature then, and we were able to bring in, you know, some sponsorship money for the 100th state fair. And we have those agreements that continually go on, and we're always looking for private sponsorship dollars to come into the fair to make it, to ease the burden on the general fund side of the equation.
Please. So do you have any numbers? I mean, have we actually been able to see significant contributions?
Mr. Chairman, I do have numbers. It looks like for the past 3 years, we're able to bring in $75,000 a year in sponsorships. Okay. Mr. Chairman, this was not unexpected. Mr. Chairman, I knew this might go like this. So,
so, you know, at the end of the day, this is all pretty depressing. It would be wonderful to have a great state fair and have wonderful grounds and have a lot of participation and have lots of sponsorships and turn this thing around. But I don't feel that energy. I don't feel the drive. So somehow I hope somebody or somehow we get this thing going. But the answer isn't just throwing more money at it. At the end of the day, it's participation and people and commitment and lots of time and effort. And it's just a tough boat. And so we feel for the fair board and the members and perhaps part of the Converse County and Douglas ought to all sit down on a table and figure some of this out. But it would I don't see anything really imaginative and huge and powerful to save this thing, other than what I see as a threat that we're going to shut it down because $3 million, $500,000 isn't enough. I'm going, that's almost offensive. I'm just going, come on, folks, we can do better than this. We got to change our perspective on this, and we'd like to try to help if we can. So,
Mr. Chairman, it certainly wasn't my intention to offend anybody with, you know, I I don't want to lay out threats about, you know, if we don't get this, then this happens. It's just a, it's just an analytical thing for us in the, in looking at.
Well, we could advocate, we could have you take it out of your part of the parts of your budget, I suppose.
Right.
As an alternative.
Right. I would prefer we not do that.
Oh, I didn't mean to cut you off.
Do you have
any
swimming pools there?
Mr. Chairman, we do not. We do not.
Go ahead, Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, Director, you don't necessarily have to answer now because I really don't want to just put you on the spot. But, you know, the sort of sense of this binary option, you know, I mean, in my own mind, I'm thinking, well, maybe we – you know, there were a lot of budget amendments last year, and sometimes perhaps we weren't thinking of biennializing the money. So, I mean, in my own head, and I'm not asking you to answer right at this instant if you don't feel that you can, but, you know, if we were to continue with the $400,000 that we were thinking of last year to encourage more revenue generation, you know, fee raising, but not biennialize it, let's just say. I mean, I personally would really like to see a little bit more nuanced analysis of where there's a midpoint of where you could, you know, trim, cut 2 days, let's say, and still have a fair. And maybe we don't need to know that answer right at this instant, but, I mean, I think I probably do speak for some other people on the committee, which was it would be better to not have only a choice of A or B.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, this was something that we really grappled with. Over the past 4 or 5 years, we've been looking at the balance of the revenue account, and frankly, we were spending money for the kind of fare that people were asking for. You know, they wanted a PRCA rodeo. They wanted nights of entertainment, and we were providing those and trying to do that as judiciously as we could without falling off this cliff of the 100th. But by the same token, you could see that the account balance in that revenue account was going to daylight in the not-too-distant future. And so we had to ask ourselves, what is the minimum amount of money that it takes in order to host what we would consider to be a state fair? What are the minimum things that people expect, maybe, or would like to see in a state fair, and how much can we get that done for? I would say last year's fair provided the best example for us. We cut that thing to where we had very little entertainment. There was not a lot of the choices available that we had had traditionally for entertainment associated with the state fair. And all that being said, it looks like that fair, just in the contract amounts that we sent out, we spent about $690,000. Now, that's down from $1.15 in 2015. And so, you know, when we were looking at, okay, what is the eventual balance of this revenue account, that's where we came up with this analysis of, boy, you know, we don't want to be offensive with it, but this isn't sustainable for us, and at some point we've got to make the decision of we've got this campus, it's a state asset, where we've got to, you know, do what we can to protect the value of the grounds and the buildings, and we don't know how we could spend money to host a fair, and more or less we would be diverting money away from the buildings and maintenance operations of the fairgrounds to try to host the fair event itself. And that puts us in a tough situation, obviously, as well. But when we go through and do these analytics about where does it daylight, what happens if we take $400,000 and not the full $800,000, these are the scenarios that James is working on right now, and we would be able to float a fair maybe through this biennium that way before the money daylights and we don't have anything left in that revenue account at all. But that was my intent, was to provide pure analytics of this is where we're at. We've done everything I think we can to get the cost of the fair down, and now we've got to look at condensing the schedule a little bit, even to make the money last that we
that we're asking for here.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On your maintenance, as you said, this is a state asset, state property. Do you get money through state construction department for major maintenance and routine maintenance?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we do.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. You know, Doug, I guess I want to go back to this statement on 93 because I think you tried to explain the 350, but when I read this last sentence, it says fixed expenses such as ticket takers, janitorial staff, security, combined with judges and show superintendents, even for a very small event, would exceed $350,000 per year. So, okay, yeah, would exceed, right? So, but it suggests that that's a base level. And then you go on to say that the last fare we put on is $690,000, and that's a minimum. Yeah. There's a lot of room between $690,000 and $350,000. And maybe this isn't worded correctly in the budget book, but it doesn't. There is, it's twice. You know, your minimum that you just said, 690, is virtually twice what you say the minimum event could be. So that just doesn't make sense to me.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, yes, the $350,000 is our projection and analysis of our revenue account and where it would be. If you assume that nothing happens with this budget, we don't get the exception budget through or anything like that, but the obligations that are coming out of the revenue account that are scheduled to come out, we would have a biennial balance in that account of $700,000. So that leaves us $350,000 to spend on each of the two fares that would need to be supported throughout the biennium, which is where you come up with that $350,000. What does it take to put on a fair? Yes, last year we spent $690,000, and that was a pretty pared down event. Could we close that gap some by condensing schedules and doing some of those other things? That's what the state fair staff is looking at right now, but the fair would look different than it did even last year. It would have to be significantly reduced, obviously, from what we did last year.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Dockster.
Director, appreciate you going through all this. It's probably not a pleasant afternoon for you, but it's are we reaching out? Have we got all of our counties out there attending? Is there some way to say this is more than just a Converse County fair? It's a state fair. Appreciate you bringing the numbers down. I text back to our county fair, one of the three counties I represent, and I said, what do we put in it all year long? Because we have a lot of events on the grounds all year long, not just our fair, but all year long. And they texted back, and they said, we got $490 in our fair. To come back to Converse County, are we at a position where we can say it's truly a state fair and not just for that area alone? I know we send people there, not a lot, but we send people there. Can we call it a state fair? Are we getting 23 counties out there?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Doc Stater, yes, we have representation from all the counties participating in the fair.
Further questions? Going once. All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On page 95, this is another exception budget item relative to state fair, but it's guided by ETS, and this is for data circuits, I'm told. $8,316, and the governor recommended approval of that request. On page 98, we have our state fair non-fair time activities section budget, and we have no exception budget items for this unit. On page 102, we have our highway weed and pest control budget, and we have no exception budget items for this unit. On page 106, we have our predator management budget, and we do have an exception budget item on page 106, and this is a request to restore $250,000 for our wolf management program relative to the predator zone. The governor did recommend approval of this.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Director. So as I read that statute, it sounds like districts have the ability to levy a dollar, I think, a head for predator control. And as we've come back to the Department of Ag and we've said, you know, this, you know, here's where we're at, and we need to make sure that everybody's kind of doing their own before they come back to the well. So my question to you is, every district that would be served by this wolf control levying that $1 per head predator fee?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, I believe we have 18 of the 23 counties that assess the full dollar and are eligible to participate in our ADMB grant program proper. This wolf funding, we've never made the designation that you have to be a participant in the ADMB program in order to seek funds from our wolf program.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. Well, but that's kind of what it is predator control.
Yes.
And to me, it just seems like that would be an appropriate step for the Department of Ag to do, and is to make sure that all the counties that are participating in that program would be assessing that. And maybe they are. I guess that's the question. I'm just wondering if they are.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, I'll check on our program rules. It hasn't been up and running, obviously, for a couple years since the federal government had jurisdiction. I'll check, and if that is not in there, that's something that we should consider, and I'll do it.
Okay. It would be nice to know before we make that decision, because if we're not, I think that we would probably want to hold off on any appropriation, or at least in my mind, until we see what kind of revenue that would take care of.
Okay. Okay. On page 110, we have the Wyoming Beef Council program budget. We have no exception budget items for this unit. And on page 116, we have the Wyoming Wheat Marketing Commission program budget, and we have no exception budget items for this unit. On page 120, we have the Wyoming Dry Bean Research Program, and we have no exception budget items for this unit. And then finally, on page 125, we have the Leafcutter Bee Program budget, and we have no exception budget items for this budget. And, Mr. Chairman, that concludes our review of our budget, and appreciate the time.
Further questions? Okay, thanks a lot. We'll take a quick break. What do we have left?
Mr. Chairman, you have a presentation on local governments.
That's it. So.
Mr. Chairman, as short as 30 minutes, maybe as long as an hour, depending on questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Moniz, I'm representing the Joint Ag Committee, and with me is Representative Larson from Converse County. And what the Joint Ag Committee was tasked with from Management Council was to look at making Wyoming State Fair self-sufficient. So we had one day set aside just for Wyoming State Fair. We met in Douglas and solicited input from a variety of folks. So what we basically started with is, why are we having a Wyoming State Fair? Well, in our mind, it's about the youth of our state. It is basically the state high school finals for agriculture in our state. It's probably the largest youth event. It is the largest youth event attended in the state of Wyoming. So we looked at the statute. The statute was, we felt, somewhat obsolete, so we rewrote it, or you'll see a bill. You have a bill in your possession that hasn't been public yet about that. Then we looked at the management of the fair, how the board was made up. They're at the present time appointed a board by actually the Ag Department. So we wrote in the bill that the governor would appoint those members instead of being, or board members, instead of them being advisory board, they're administrative board. Then we felt that it was important that on that board they were represented by an additional person, or actually three additional people, one from the tourism board, or a representative from tourism, one from the parks department, and one from the energy industry. And our goal there was to focus more on running the state fair the other 51 weeks of the year and being successful as a business. And then we also looked at the facilities. As they mentioned, there's 100 and some acres there that is a large facility. It's a state investment. That ground was donated over 100 years ago to the state of Wyoming, with one caveat. Caveat being that state fair, if it's not had a state fair consecutive 3 years, the grounds then go back to the owner, and the state has the 24 months to remove the facilities, or what they don't do goes back to the original owner, which apparently that original owner no longer exists. But I think maybe that point's irrelevant. The point is, why are we having a state fair? It's our point. It's about the youth of our state. And then about the management the other 51 weeks out of the year, we think by making that board an appointed board, and focus on running the state fairgrounds as a business, well, would be a benefit. And lastly, I spent 4 years on appropriations prior to my this year. In my 4 years of appropriation, I never seen a maintenance schedule for those facilities. We see one for school facilities every year. They rate all of their fairgrounds, or all of their facilities. Actually, we asked in Ag, where do we have one? And actually, the State Facilities Department is rating those facilities. And you might even ask for one from them if you don't have one to look at that. But we were concerned about the maintenance of the facilities, the ongoing maintenance. The other thing you heard today that I think is interesting is they said they have four boots on the ground to maintain over 44 buildings. My wife and I have been attending State Fair for probably 50 years as an individual, as a parent, and now as a grandparent. It's important to the ag community in this state, not only the youth, but they do have open contests where people come in. But it's a gathering for the ag community in this state of Wyoming once a year to show off their wares, and I think it's important to look at. So, see, I think you as an appropriations committee have two tasks. What's state fair worth to you and the youth in this state? What's the investment worth? And then I think the way our bill's structured, we can maybe give them an opportunity to be more successful than they are as they exist structurally today. And three, we have to look at maintaining the facilities we have as they exist today. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I stand for question.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And Glenn, you may not know this, but so in your bill, the board gets the standard, you know, the money. The members get so much per diem and stuff, and so it adds up to $95,000. Is the current board that's appointed by Department of Ag, does it get the same per diem, or will this be a new, different appropriation or a new appropriation on the board side.
Thank you, Representative Summers, Mr. Chairman. Good question. They don't get paid. What we did when we restructured the board, that we looked at what do boards across the spectrum in the state of Wyoming that represent the different boards in the state get paid, and it's the gamut. It varies anywhere from, I don't remember, but we arrived at kind of a middle ground thing in our bill of whatever the budget was, and I can't honestly remember what it was, but it was kind of the middle. There is an LSO study out on that. I could also give, if you're interested, on, and I'm sure LSO could do the same, of what boards in the state of Wyoming get. But it does vary, but that is an appropriation in that bill. I guess that's going to be at the pleasure of what they want to do with that, but we felt that if they're going to assume some responsibility and have some budget responsibility, they ought to get paid for what they're doing.
Mr. Chairman.
We've been trying to get the state fair to be economically responsible for years now, and we just never get anywhere with them. We tell them to raise the fee here or charge more there. And, you know, we just get shined on every time. We have for years and years. And, you know, the idea of a $2 entry is ridiculous. Good Dockstetter, Senator Dockstetter next to me, checked with his local county fair as to how much it costs the Lincoln County to operate their fairgrounds. It costs them almost $500,000. I know that Sheridan County fairgrounds cost more than that on a year-round basis, and yet Douglas County, for their county fair, pay about $20,000-$25,000 a year to hold their county fair there. I mean, there's just no thinking going on about how are we going to support this, and maybe some business-like decisions to be made. Like, how about charging Douglas County a fee for their county fair that's commensurate with what the other counties are paying for their own county fairgrounds. Things like that. And it's just something that just never seems to enter their mind. All we ever get from them is we need more money up here. And it's the typical, stereotypical, state employee thing. Just give us more money and we won't change anything that we do.
I'll answer that. Senator Burns, Mr. Chairman, and I think Representative Clausen would also like to answer that. But first, I'd like to answer that by saying that's why we restructured the board. That's why we added tourism, parks, and the mineral industry into this to start thinking and running that facility as a business. You heard a separate budget today of other activities. That's a very small portion of their budget. Most of it's focused on state fair. We need to focus on that other 51 weeks out of the year. I think, and hopefully they will do that. But we have to give them the resources to be successful. I'm not sure we've done that either. Let's hope. Our bill isn't going to be a quick fix, but I think it starts to build them an opportunity to have the resources to be successful. There's also included in that bill, and somewhat controversial, is we allow them to gamble on that facility. There's been interest to put horse racing back at the Wyoming State Fair, to where they could do parametral racing. I was chair of the Hyde Mayor steer roping in Albany County. We had parametral steer roping there. You can't believe the interest it stirs up in some of them. We have to start thinking outside of the box. It'll help them be successful.
Mr. Chairman, have you seen any of that thinking, any of that progressive-type thinking from the current board or what they're doing? Like I said, the frustration I'm saying is we just changed, you know, we're the board's, this bill's going to change it. And this is something we've been harping on them for 20 years, and the locals in Douglas about this.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, I hope they've got the message. They've heard it from us. They're hearing it from you. All I can say is I hope they get the message, because if they don't, they're in trouble.
By the way, one other thing. You mentioned paramutual. Can the paramutual board or paramutual commission put machines?
Sure, they can.
On those grounds?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, when I was chair of the Hyde Mayor steer roping in Albany County, they brought in a tote board that you can set it up. It would not be difficult.
I'm not talking about live paramutual on the rodeo. I'm talking about the machines that they have here in Cheyenne.
Yes, they can. They sure can.
That might be the answer.
Go ahead, Aaron.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Clausen from Commerce County. I'll speak to what the county does now and the way the board's structured. Commerce County does pitch in roughly $40,000 in cash a year, and then $15,000 in kind, use of equipment, personnel. And then on top of that, they rent any facility they use during their county fair or for any county event at the youth rate. And then on top of that, they pitch in tourism dollars from the tax, and I'm not exactly certain where all the flows go on that. And the structure of the board is what this bill speaks to, actually. Right now, there isn't actually a board. It's an advisory board. So they advise. They have no teeth whatsoever in making any decision, and that's where we believe we could see a lot of improvements is if this board actually had some teeth instead of just an advisory role.
Mr. Chairman? Are there any historical horse racing places in Douglas right now?
I don't believe so. I think in the old days they had horse races. There's photos of it, but I don't
know. No, I'm talking about the machines. I don't know if you're familiar with what I'm talking about.
I don't believe so, but not to my knowledge, let's put it that way.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, Perry Mitchell Commission has portable machines. When we hosted them, they brought all of that to
okay.
us.
Okay.
Anybody could set it up. You could set it up in Sheridan tomorrow and have your rodeo pyramids or whatever you chose to do.
Well, Sheridan has the machines right now, both Wyoming Downs and the other one. And the city and the county each are getting $110,000 a year just in their just from taxes from this.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, again, I think if we can encourage this new board to think outside of the box and try to do some things, I think we can make it successful. Also, you asked a question. Somebody on the committee asked a question about who attends Wyoming State Fair. They have done a patron survey. It's fairly old. We looked at that. Who attends the Wyoming State Fair? I think maybe Representative Wilson brought it up. It's mothers, it's fathers, it's grandparents, and the kids are the bulk of the folks who show up at the Wyoming State Fair for that week. Then you look at the other things that bring folks to the state fairs, the carnival, rodeo, he mentioned the demolition derby. I know in Albany County, the demolition derby generates a lot of money for their fairgrounds. It's those kinds of functions that, in addition to the Wyoming State Fair, that help them generate revenue. Our issue is we've got to quit focusing just on the Wyoming State Fair. You need to answer the question to yourself. What is the youth of this state, and how important is the ag youth of this state to this committee? And is it worth investing money to do that? You'll have to make that decision what that dollar value has to be. Maybe you want to keep them, as we discussed, keep them lean enough to make them think outside the box. But once you have the state fair, what do you do with this massive facility the rest of the year? And that's the other thing that we need to focus on. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll continue to answer any questions you might have.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I just wanted to thank you, Senator and Representative, for adding some comments to the afternoon. I will say this. My sympathies go out to all of those who are involved with the state fair, because in this day and age, and I do speak from experience, my 30 years of professional experience land right here. I know exactly how to do what they're doing, and it's very, very difficult, and it's changing in this modern environment. It's all about corporate relationships and partnerships, and you've got to have an energy and enthusiasm to go out and get major league partners in order to make something like this work. And you know, my hope would be that there's somebody who can serve as the point person and have that kind of energy. It takes that. I mean, it's very competitive out there now. So many different events. Think about the state of Wyoming just 30 years ago. There's so many more events. Every weekend it's jam-packed, not just in my community, but all over the state. You've got lots of things, dog races and all kinds of stuff. And you've got to it takes a real energy and commitment to go out there and get that kind of money. And I think we got some catch up to do there. So.
I would agree.
So I'm curious. To me, there needs to be kind of a marketing plan. There needs to be every FFA and 4-H group could do a Save Our Fair fundraising program to create an endowment fund. I mean, there's just the sky's the limit on and you know could do a statewide campaign to save the state fair. You can hire professional entities will come in and they take 10% of the take, and I mean they can raise hundreds of thousands and sometimes millions of dollars. They're very sophisticated, very professional in how they do it, and this is the kind of thing that you could get a lot of, I think, emotional commitment into it and kind of rebirth the thing. There's, you know, I mean, put it into a short and long-term business plan, and a lot of creative thinking could happen with this. And so we've got to do it. At the end of the day, there's let me go to Senator Landon first.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just to put in with where you're going with that, you know, there's corporate names that could be attached to things. There's some big money sorts of agreements that could be made, I think. Big money, the kind of big money that we think of in Wyoming. I'm not talking about Churchill Downs here or anything, but certainly for that arena, that location, I think there's some things that could be done, but you're exactly right. It's going to take some creative thinking and maybe some outside partnerships to have the resources to go get the resources. So,
Mr. Chairman, just a couple of follow-up comments. Wyoming State Fair does have a strategic plan. You might also ask for that, or I could give you that as well. And then it probably doesn't focus enough on the kind of issues we're talking about. It's focused more on State Fair itself. Also, I might add that Representative Henderson's working on a bill to start a foundation, which is, I really think, an excellent idea. I haven't seen the final draft on it yet, but that could help as well. So I think there's folks out there working to make Wyoming State Fair successful. But they're going to need your help. They're drowning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Clausen, I guess this question would be directed to you. That's kind of your backyard over there. And I'm just curious on your opinion of the impact the State Fair has on Douglas and the support that area of the state. Is there the support there that really should be there for an event of that nature?
There's a lot of local support. Is it very organized? No. The problem and the solution that we have is the energy industry right there. It's hugely volatile. 2 years ago, 2 to 3 years ago, don't hold me to the date, every single camping spot inside the state fair was booked every single day for 365 days a year because we needed it for overflow for oil field workers. And it's just so extraordinarily volatile. Yes, there's a huge community commitment. At the meetings, the community turned out, packed the cafeteria. Every meeting that they've had has been packed. There is community support. Is it organized? No. Could it use a little better direction? Absolutely. But yes and no. It's so volatile in Converse County that a steady flow of planning on 40,000 or 80,000, it could be 40,000 and 80,000 in two separate years, depending on the energy industry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the opportunity to speak to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, I realize there's no public comment, but there's just one bit of information I think is important because it was talked about so much here regarding paramutual at the state fair. The trouble with that suggestion is that first has to be approved by the voters in each county, and Converse County has not approved paramutual. So paramutual cannot exist at the state fair until that happens. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Excuse me?
Just a quick question for you. I have not seen the bill that was referenced by one of our colleagues on the House side. Representative Henderson, I understand, is looking at a foundation bill for the state fair, and I hope that might one of the, you know, I was just going to say I've always been a fan of matching opportunities, and I don't know if he's going there, but that's something that I might be willing to support. Anybody who contributes to a foundation fund for that fair, we could perhaps match that, or we'll see what that bill looks like, but thank you. Yeah.
So, Don, for the next presentation, are we still on over the air?
Mr. Chairman, yes. It was scheduled for the public committee. I think it's a rather short. You should have three copies of handouts in your materials. First is a letter from the Wyoming Association of Municipalities. The second is a PowerPoint presentation prepared by Mr. Sackett of the LSO staff. And then third, there is a initial draft of the local government distribution formula in bill form.
Co-chairman, members of the committee, Matt Sack with LSO, and sitting to my right is Josh Anderson with LSO. He's the wordsmithing legal mind that drafted the local government bill. As Don Richards has mentioned, I provided a number of documents that explain and display how the local government distribution works for both counties and municipalities. Those are not simple formulas and have a variety of steps. I will leave, I guess, this discussion up to the direction of the committee. I can give more of a high-level description of what the pieces are and the different formulas and reasoning why those pieces are in place and answer any kind of questions, or we can do more of a complete walkthrough step-by-step if you would prefer. I know it's kind of late in the day, so that's up to you. Chairman Nicholas, I'm not aware. What number are you referring to?
Oh, it's on the local government distribution district.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that is just distributions through the local government funding model. Different models over time. Mr. Chairman, no. Would you like me to walk through the PowerPoint or?
I think you educate us as much as you can and we'll catch you up
on it. All right. Maybe just a high level generalized discussion, and then if we have certain points in the PowerPoint or you do have separate flow charts as well. Those flow charts also have step by step pieces in the back that take you kind of step through step. I don't think you probably want to go through those. They're on the back end after the PowerPoint, Mr. Chairman. Yeah. So maybe a high-level brief summary. So this is a renewal of the same distribution formula that was provided in the 17 and 18 biennium. The local government distribution formula splits the overall funding of the $105 million, around $65 million to incorporated municipalities and 35% to the counties. These amounts are then split over four payments or two payments per fiscal year, so four payments over the biennium. That's roughly $34 million per fiscal year to the municipalities and $18.5 million per fiscal year to the counties. Though important is the calculations for the second biennium are updated in this bill with the most recent available data.
So is this the Ben formula?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, Co-Chairman Burns, yes, this is the genesis a number of years ago of the Revenue Committee and the good Chairman Madden.
Okay.
My Chairman Madden. So basically the formula, generally speaking, for municipalities and counties works in a very similar fashion. They both incorporate a per capita sales and use tax component and a per capita assessed value component, along with a form of hardship component, or is also sometimes referred to as a revenue challenge component. The per capita components are really the main piece of these funding formulas.
Matt, when you're going through this, if you're reflecting on a page, would you just make sure that you're telling us where we're at so we can follow you?
Mr. Chairman, for sure. Right now I'm just kind of trying to, I think, vocally describe what the model, how it works. The per capita funding is based on a number of calculations, but the main basis is per capita assessed value and per capita sales and use tax. The per capita components are designed in an attempt to quantify the ability of municipalities and counties to generate their own revenues. This allows the funding formula to account for the ability of entities to raise their own revenue, and thus the model provides more funding for counties and municipalities that don't have that ability. The municipality formula relies more on sales and use tax per capita, and the county formula relies more on assessed value per capita, because historically that is how cities are funded, is by sales and use, and counties are funded more by property tax. There are a couple additional components. The municipality distribution has a flat component for $10,000 for municipalities under 10,000 and $20,000 for municipalities over 35. So that feeds into the model as well, and it's just a flat distribution. And then counties have an additional component which takes the Department of Audit's cost of county government information and provides another index that feeds within the model. Both of them also have these hardship components. The municipal hardship is based on a separate calculation of the lowest quartile of sales and use taxes. This provides additional money for the lowest revenue municipalities in terms of their sales and use tax per capita. So that extra hardship component add some funding to those low per capita municipalities. That total is relatively small at $1.7 million. The county hardship similarly is based on counties that have assessed values that do not generate $300,000 per mill. So the adjustment provides an adjustment up to $300,000, up to 3 mills. So, for example, if a county had $250,000 per mill, they would get an adjustment of $50,000 per mill for 3 mills, or a total adjustment of $150,000. Just kind of a final overview. Those components, the proportional component and hardship or revenue component, added together give you the total payments to the counties and municipalities. One final piece is these components work together and interact with each other in a dynamic way, so it's very responsive to changes in what's happening in Wyoming, but it's very difficult to predict how the numbers are going to shake out each year until you actually put all the numbers in the model and see what comes out. So, would we like to walk through some of the flow charts or the bill? It's sure. So, starting with the PowerPoint, the first page kind of just tells you the topics. The second page kind of gives you some history. They've been basically provided every year since 04, except for the 09 session, and they're typically distributed by the Office of State Lands and Investments.
Thank you. So what caused that to happen in 2004? Give us the history there. You say it's starting back in about 2004. What caused it to
A number of reasons, but one of the main ones was the removal of the sales tax on food. All counties and incorporated municipalities have been in receiving this distribution since that time. It also was a outgrowth of the de-earmarking process, Representative Larson, to follow up. Moving on to the next page, just a quick summary of the major tax revenue sources for counties: sales and use tax, property tax, gas and diesel taxes, severance taxes, wind generation, lottery distributions, and then a wide variety of other taxes. Moving on to the next page is similar information for municipalities. Sales and use tax, which is the municipality's main source, property taxes, gas and diesel, severance taxes, federal mineral royalties, lottery, and a number of other taxes as well.
So these are the basically the state taxes that are distributed to all the municipalities and to all the counties. But do you have a spreadsheet that shows how much the municipalities and counties are getting with their additional individual taxes, like who has the fifth penny and the sixth penny and so forth?
Mr. Chairman, Co-Chairman Burns, not in total, I guess, for each county, no.
And also some counties do not tax at the maximum allowable mills. So can you get us a copy of how much each county is actually taking in when you count up all that stuff?
Mr. Chairman, we can take a swing at that.
Thank you. So that would include, for instance, the towns and counties that are getting paramutual also, things like that.
Continue on, Mr. Chairman. The next page shows the FY19 distribution flow chart. This is the first part of the bill that divides out how the $105 million is basically diverted to the counties and the municipalities. So if you see on the left there, there's that roughly $34 million per fiscal year and the $18.5 million per fiscal year for the county distribution, that 35% versus 65%. Down below that then is the hardship distribution for the municipalities, that $1.7 million, which is 5% of their total, and then the flat and proportional distribution, which is the vast majority of that funding. Over on the right is the small assessed value.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On that 1.7, that's a 5% of the total that's distributed equally amongst the hardship. Is that how that works?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, yes, the 5% is taken off of the top of the distribution, so it's 5% of the 64.83%.
And so then you take that, and then you take the total number of hardship municipalities, divide it equally, or is it based on population?
There's a number of components that go into how that hardship distribution works. The lowest quartile, which there's further detail in the other pages, but the hardship distribution, the lowest quartile of municipalities get an adjustment to raise them to what the quartile would be. But there is not full funding within the model to provide that funding. So what happens is each community, each municipality that qualifies under the lowest quartile then receives their percentage of the amount owed compared to all the municipalities that qualify under the lowest quartile amount. So if you're a municipality you're a municipality and five municipalities qualify, you would get your percentage of what the total of those five municipalities should have received. So maybe you could have gotten $1 million, but there's not that much, so you got 10%, which is what your share of what all of those municipalities total was, if that makes sense. Yes, Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, the $1.7 million or 5%. The county distribution over there on the right shows that small assessed value adjustment, which is that $300,000 per mil minimum. The difference between this one and the municipal one is this is taken off the top, so there's no limit to that amount, which is why you'll see the amount there is variable depending on how many counties are below the $300,000 per mil and then how much below that they are. So this amount is calculated before the rest of the distribution, basically.
So that distribution, Mr. Chairman, if I may, that distribution, again, they make that total calculation, and that's going to take come right off the top. Then they'll take the remainder and divide it amongst the whole.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, yes, the whatever's taken off the top, the rest then flows through the rest of the county distribution model. So through the
including that.
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going back just one step, when you do the breakdown between counties and municipalities, I don't quite get this formula because, for instance, for counties, it's one-third of 89% plus 5.5%. Is that going back to when they used to get more than just the 105?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schwartz, it is a bit of a remnant from previous local government distribution models. The way it was crafted within the bill, the additional piece with those 5.5% was a remnant of trying to make the job easier for the drafter in terms of hardship distribution. So that was the way the calculations were put in there. Do you have anything to add on that, Mr. Anderson?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I think it was just part of the genesis of the bill. We used some old bills, and that was how Chairman Madden had kind of based his calculations, and so we did it that way to make it work through the model the way he thought it should work. And it evolved, if you'll recall, through session. There were quite a few amendments on this. It's not exactly the Madden formula as it came out of the recommendations of the Revenue Committee. It was changed quite a bit through session. But that was just a holdover from some of those others, and no real magic to it other than that's how it worked in the model.
As I indicated, the rest of that distribution, once you take away the small assessed value piece for counties, then flows through the rest of the per capita and other pieces of the funding model. Moving on to the next page is a detailed description of how the county distribution works. We already discussed basically that top box up there, which showed the small assessed value adjustment. And I actually need to adjust that FY19 number. But that's the raising them up to 300,000. You take that money off of the top, and then you have the proportional distribution. If you look over on the left, that's that sales tax per capita calculation I was discussing. You take that, you invert that number and normalize it, and then you weight that by 24%. Since this is the county.
I'm sorry. You take that number and normalize it. Explain that, please.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, as we will get into the details. You take your sales and use value per capita, and what you do is divide that one by that number. So if it was $250 per capita, And farther on in the explanation is,
then you
the,
go up to make it up
is
to
the step.
Yeah, you make it to the 300,000 per mil.
But not in
the
this
term
one.
Normalizing that's confusing me.
You take one divided by that number. You do that for every municipality. You then add up all of those and divide your municipal number by the total sum of all of the municipality numbers. To normalize that, you then divide your amount by the total.
And then I'm normalized?
Yep. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. I didn't know it was that easy.
Could we try it with you?
I think it'd be painful.
You then take that amount times 24% because then that's a weighted normalized value. Mr. Chairman, you then do the same thing basically for the assessed value per capita. You calculate that number, invert it, and normalize, and take that times 76% for a weighted value. In the middle there, you'll see the additional piece, which is the cost of government index, and that's a regression analysis based on Department of Audit's cost of county governments. This was calculated by Representative Madden, and it equals 628 times the population plus 9.9 million. You normalize that, so you basically take what your total is as a municipality and divide that by the total to arrive at your cost of government normalized index.
Also, I can say we should invite Representative Madden to present this to the Senate. And then ask you to vote aye on all our bills, and they'll be no.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the sales tax per capita and the sales value per capita, when you get them totally weighted out and combined, that's your 100%. And so my question there was to help me understand, is the 76% on assessed value because that's your greater value in the county versus the sales tax?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, that's correct. Historically, the 76% and the 24% are the average county numbers in Wyoming and was calculated by Representative Madden.
So, Mr. Chairman, you're saying that for the most part, 70% of, or 76% of the revenue into the county is through the assessed value. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman, yes, the property tax.
Let me ask a much more basic question. Why 105 million? Why not 100 million, 95, or 110?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, yeah, it was legislatively designated number. There's no magic behind it.
So if I came back and wanted to set it at 95 million, there's really no rhyme or reason to keep it at 105.
Mr. Chairman, no.
Oh, wait a minute. You may be corrected.
Mr. Tempty added in that the 105 was the governor's recommendation.
Yeah, but that's because it was. That's what it was the last couple of years. All right.
But it's been less than that coming out of here.
Yeah. Yeah, but then it got boosted up again. All right. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the formulas work regardless of the number, if it was 100 million or 200 million or 50 million, you may normalize that, Mr. Chairman. Those three pieces then all get added, well, multiplied together, and then you normalize that value again and take that times the remaining amount of money to get the distribution to each municipality. You add that, or each county, and then you add the small assessed value in to get to your total distribution. Moving on to the next page, is the municipal distribution. This has a lot of the same components that the county distribution just had. We'll kind of start actually in the middle. That's the flat distribution. That's that $10,000 for populations 35 or fewer and $20,000 for populations over 35. Over on the left-hand side, you'll see that sales and use tax per capita. You then invert and normalize that and weight that by 75%. So you see that's kind of the opposite of the county's formula. The assessed value per capita is on the right. You invert and normalize that as well, and then you weight that by 25%, again, reflecting the different revenue sources for municipalities versus counties. You then sum the weighted normalized percentage values per capita times the municipal population. You then normalize that sum by all the products to determine the percent of the proportional distribution. You multiply that result by the remaining distribution after deducting the 5% hardship and the flat distribution. So you take out the 5% and that flat distribution, whatever's left, then flows through this proportional distribution.
Just to clarify then, Matt, what that means is that hardship distribution comes off the top and then it all municipalities are thrown back in the hopper and it's the funds are distributed afterwards. Did I understand you correctly?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Landon, that is correct. The 5% is set aside, but the distribution of that 5% isn't actually calculated quite yet. So the 5% is that $1.7 million is sitting there and will be calculated here in this next step. But it is taken off of the top for that proportional distribution.
Okay.
That value is your then total proportional distribution is that flat plus this conglomeration of the sales and use tax per capitas and assessed values per capita calculations. The hardship distribution then takes your total sales and use tax per capita and your total proportional distribution that you just received per capita and calculates the lowest quartile amount. If you're below the quartile amount, you calculate the per capita amount below the quartile and multiply that by your municipal population. You then distribute the hardship amount based on each municipality's percent of the total amount needed to reach the quartile amount. So this is that adjustment where you get basically your percentage of what is calculated for all the municipalities under the quartile amount. That hardship amount, which in total is that $1.7 million, you see there on the right. That 5%, Mr. Chairman, yes. Is then provided in total for your total distribution. What you see there is around that $34 million per fiscal year you see on the right side of the total there.
Can they use it, like next year, can they use the 2010 population for the most recent census?
Mr. Chairman, yes, it is the 2010 census, but as identified by the Economic Analysis Division, they provide an update every year. And generally, that just may shift a little population between municipalities and counties.
How did they get that? Do they go back and survey the? How did they come up with that change in population?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, those are just provided by boundary change updates that are provided by the Census Bureau. The changes for municipality boundaries are generally have to be sent in by the municipalities to the federal government, so they should be accurate. Following on to the next page is the FY19 estimated county distributions. So that shows each county any 3 mil small assessed value adjustment distribution, the proportional distribution, and then the total distribution. So at the bottom there you see the $18.5 million in total. Then the following three or four pages then provide the distribution for all the municipalities. It shows the main distribution, which includes that flat distribution plus the assessed value and and sales and use tax distribution, and then any hardship distribution funding to get to the total distribution. That's the last four pages, I think, five.
Mr. Chairman, and I think you may have received a letter from Joint Revenue. They looked at this, and they ultimately
the to explain it to them.
we didn't go into any depth in the formula, but they did ultimately recommend that, or they found that it was kind of outside of their realm, but they would recommend to you guys to sponsor this bill.
So my question is, if it becomes in the form of a bill, then it becomes a recurring obligation, which is a two-year bill?
Mr. Chairman, this is a two-year appropriation.
Okay. So it's just right. Don?
Mr. Chairman, if I could add two more items of context. This is this formula has been in existence for one biennium, or 2 years. Prior to that, it was a much more complicated formula than this one even, that had developed over about a decade. The one area of a fair bit of discussion this summer that I just wanted to bring the committee's attention to is the timing factor associated with this bill. Historically, the legislature has made appropriations under two types of conditions. Condition number one is use all of the known information and send out a biennial amount, $105 million or whatever you decide, and all of the municipalities and counties will know how much they're getting for the next 2 years. That practice has been followed about maybe 80% of the time. The remaining 20% of the time, including this year, you made it use the most recent data. So when that data became known this summer, and actually the payments get made in August, which is after the counties and municipalities make their budgets in June or July, there are some pretty dramatic hundreds of thousands of dollars of swings, or whether one community is a hardship community that year or not. The prime example this year is Laramie. They did not experience the downfall that the rest of the state did because they don't have a minerals-based economy. As this formula looks at it, they were not as bad off as they were the previous year, and proportionally to the other communities like Gillette and Rock Springs. So they got a couple $100,000 less money. That's not the only example of this. There was a big dispute in 2002, I believe, between Worland and Torrington because one of them qualified for hardship funding, and the other one got knocked out of hardship funding. So it can mean several hundred thousand dollars whether you're on that tipping point or not. So I just want to bring that because we received many contacts, maybe not from you, but from your colleagues, depending on whether your community was a winner or a loser. And there were, just like Laramie was a loser, there were other communities that benefited from having the most recent available data.
So as drafted, is it the most recent data?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, you'll see on page 3 of the bill there, so half of the amount is in the first year, half is in the second year, and so it recalculates in the interim, and that's where the change happens.
Just so everyone understands, this bill is basically a mirror bill of 2 years ago, And with the same distribution and the same amount, correct?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, it's almost exactly the same, except a couple places where the years got updated.
So to floor manage this bill, for most of us, we have to just have to say this is the same thing we did 2 years ago. So further questions about that? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So with the issue, I'm not sure I'm tracking. The issue of using the most recent information and then the payment timing, have we done something differently here with the payment and the source of the data, or was it just that there was a more radical change this year? And that's my first question. And if it's the former situation, I mean, I heard you say it's the same bill. Is there something that we can do? Maybe would we want to distribute it on a different schedule so that the counties and municipalities have the information before they set their budget?
Mr. Chairman, you could certainly revise this formula to use the same formula for both years of the biennium rather than – or the same data rather than recalculating. It would – you know, pluses and minuses, it would not recognize significant changes, but on the other hand, it would give more certainty for budgeting. But and so the changes that happened were from the original bill that was adopted 2 years ago, and this is the same where it would recalculate in the second year of the biennium.
Please.
Okay, so, but then what about just the issue of the timing? Because even if we don't change it for the second year, the first year with this timing, it might be an unanticipated difference from the previous biennium's amount. Is that right? But do we want to consider, I mean, I'm not sure we can ever really get it far enough ahead. You know, if we did, maybe even July and December wouldn't help with their budgeting. I don't know.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think we can. We could move that August back a little bit, but not probably enough to be compelling for entities. I think it gets to the prior speaker, actually, Representative Clausen mentioned in his discussion of the state fair, his county, I just used it as an example, is probably one of the most volatile counties in terms of assessed valuation as well as sales and use taxes because of the significant swings up and down, plus 50% year over year, easily. I've seen it 60%+ year over year. Because of that wild swing, whether they're on an up or a down swing, they are going to qualify for more or less funding. And if you speak with the creators of this formula, their response is that's exactly what should happen. It should be a dynamic formula, and if one county is struggling, they should be helped out. And if another county is doing well, they should not get as much money, and we should use the most recently available data that we have. The converse of that argument is some municipalities may or counties may say, we have difficulty planning. If we don't know how much we're going to have, how can we plan on expecting $500,000 or $800,000? There's a big difference there. So those are that not for us to decide. That's for you to determine.
Mr. Chairman, if I can then ask one other question. Please.
So this goes back then to Senator Burns' question about the other sources of revenue. So do we have kind of an average, the contribution that they get from this, the counties and municipalities, roughly what percentage of the average county or municipality's budget does this make up?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wilson, we don't have that information. We could maybe work with the associations to try and gather some of that. through WAM and the counties.
Okay, go ahead. Anything else? Are you scratching or raising your arm?
Scratching.
Got anything more, Matt?
That's all we have unless you have any more questions.
Any further questions? Anything else, Don, on this issue?
So just a quick note, in these charts, there is the sales and use tax and the assessed value of each municipality, so you can't really get it for the county, but if you want to see what each municipality sales and use assessed value, you can't figure your own percentage as if you want to.
Mr. Chairman, I will add, if you keep going past the PowerPoint, you'll see full versions of the flow charts that also include a step-by-step guide on how those calculations are made for each the municipalities and the counties. If you then go a little farther, you'll see landscape documents with lots of columns on them. Those are representations of the actual calculations. It doesn't show all of them just because it wouldn't fit on a page, but it does show you the sales and use tax totals, per capitas, assessed value totals, per capitas, and then the different distribution amounts. And those are sorted by county even for the municipalities, as opposed to the PowerPoint was just the municipalities to try and save space. So that does give you some additional information on where the counties and municipalities kind of sit.
Okay, great. Right. Thank you. All right, John, I think that concludes.
Mr. Chairman, it does conclude the agenda for today. This bill will be tentatively scheduled for consideration on Thursday, January 18th. So you have about a week and a half to digest this presentation before taking any action. Tomorrow you have the Insurance Department, Military Department, two gaming entities, the Paramutual, as well as the State Lottery Commission, and in the afternoon the State Parks and Game and Fish. You have two bills on the agenda. Both are relatively straightforward. One is a cleanup of the Game and Fish bill, which you heard last October in Casper, and then a new bill about an investments task force.
So the it looks like tomorrow we'll have a little extra time. I mean, Game and Fish will be relatively simple, I think. It's a presentation of their budget. State Parks might take an hour. So I'm just trying to, if we want to, part of what we can do if we have extra time tomorrow is kind of walk through and have some open discussion about some of the proposed bills that have been out there and any bills that we might want to do. And just, we don't have to make any decisions, but we can discuss it and why and what some of those things are. And maybe give a little direction on that to for the committee to think about, so we know where we're at and where we're heading on that.
Yes, Jim.
And just so you folks know, the reason that Paramutual and Lottery are on this agenda tomorrow is primarily at my request, for two different reasons. Both of them, at the end of the day, I'm going to present or suggest bills to the committee as possible additional fundraisings for other places that need income in our budget to help us budget throughout our end of our budget session. And so and various questions about their operations, their income, and how that's operated. So if you have a moment this evening, and if you have questions or want to do a little homework on asking questions to either one of those entities, that's the purpose of that. It's not the other. Really, they're just going to be here for an answer and question session. So that may not take very long. Just depends on what we
present to them. So, Mr. Co-Chair.
Mr. Chairman, I just along the same lines of what you were talking about, I think if we have any extra time tomorrow or the next day, if we can put as many bills in front of us as we can,
just to discuss
and get through those bills as soon as possible, I think it will behoove us later next week.
So, Representative Schwartz.
I looked in my file. There is no paramutual commission budget, right?
I think the answer is you have to go online to find it.
Mr. Chairman, it's actually in the large budget under 6006A, independent boards. And within that large binder, it is agency number 38.
You should have found that.
I should have, but I apologize to the entire committee.
And you should. It's not ignorance, it's more like slovenliness.
Okay, anything else? I'm gonna go mic's off.